Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. You'll notice that the intro music is different this week, and that's because my conversation with Genesee Rosenberg is all about finding ourselves, or rather, losing ourselves in places that we don't expect. So the music is an homage to all of those old tales of fairies, of fairy hills, of being respectful of their lands. And if not, well, maybe you'll lose yourself in a place where maybe you'll never leave. Thankfully, Genesee did find her way out, and I can't wait for you to hear her story. But in the meantime, I'd like to introduce you to her. She's an artist, an herbalist, and trauma process facilitator living in Portland, Oregon. And we do talk about all sorts of interesting things, including trauma process facilitation, and how we can use so many different modalities to break through to wholeness and health. But it was her story of getting lost this week that captivated me, and I think it'll captivate you as well. It's funny, it's a little scary, and it reminds us all, especially at this time of year, that we need to be respectful and we need to be mindful of those old ancient gods that walk our lands.
And we come upon this gorgeous tree. So we stop, we sit under the tree. Our conversation gets very deep about spirituality, past lives, mysticism, really just drop right in. It seems like maybe we've sat there for 30, 45 minutes. We're like, okay, that was really good. Let's head on back. Maybe we'll get some lunch. We stand up. We're both kind of like in this like ethereal headspace from our conversation. And we both realize that literally nothing looks familiar, except for the tree that we've been sitting under.
How would you introduce yourself to others?
I love that question. In my career, I describe myself as a trauma process facilitator. And what that means is I help people learn how to use the tools to identify and process their own traumas from their past. At my foundation, I'm a student and really a facilitator in general. I'm just infinitely curious about what makes us all different and what we have in common, and love to help people bring their vision to fruition, whether it's a creative project or in the work that we do in trauma process facilitation.
Yeah, now trauma process facilitation, I saw also, I believe you do internal family systems and EMDR. Am I correct about that?
Yes, so that is correct.
Now EMDR, is crazy. Okay. Cause I did it once, and I think I did it a couple times with my therapist, and, you know, I saw her every other week, and it didn't happen until the second week, but I had a memory from when I was 4 years old that came back, and it was this absolutely pivotal memory for this belief that I've had my entire life. And it was the EMDR that completely brought it up. It was absolutely fascinating. Yeah. It felt like the memory had come from somewhere in my body, like my body had been holding it. And so would you say that EMDR is kind of like somatic work a little bit? I mean, would you describe it like that?
I would. Yeah. I love that description of your experience, and I appreciate you sharing that with me. And the way I think of EMDR is, when we experience a trauma, our brain protects us from that if it feels too big for us to really process in the moment. And often the way it protects us is it kind of blinds us to the real power of that experience so that we can just continue to function in our daily life. And in a way, that gets stored almost physically in the brain. And so that process of, you know, whether you're doing the more traditional method of EMDR, which for those who are unaware stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So the traditional method, you use lights on either side of the peripheral vision and you're shifting your focus left to right. And physiologically, what's happening is you're crossing the hemispheres of the brain so that you can dig out that that trauma that's stuck somewhere deep in there and let it process by crossing that both hemispheres of the brain so that you can release it. And I deeply believe that we also hold trauma within our body physiologically. And so having somatic work done, whether that's deep tissue massage or different types of yoga therapy to help move those traumas, can be extraordinarily profound.
My God, I love deep tissue massage. Just want to put that out there. Lately, I've been having orthobiontomy done, which is, it's interesting. I see by your face, you're like, what is that?
Exactly.
So it comes out of the College of Osteopathy. And so I would say that I see this woman, she was a midwife for about 35 years. So she's birthed a lot of humans. And when I got on her table, I was like, my God, it's like I'm being rebirthed as an adult. Hmm. And a dear friend of mine came down from Colorado and she went to her also. She was like, I basically spent the entire time crying because it was such a powerful experience, but it's almost like cranial sacral, but for the whole body. And she can, you know, talk to your organs. She can talk to your muscles and the hip will say, no, I don't want to, you know, do the kidney first. And so she has to work on the kidney and then she goes to the hip. It's actually so fascinating. And, you want to talk about my nervous system downregulating? I'm just like, my God, this is astonishing. So, but you know, different things work for different people. What works for me might not work for someone else. But I definitely have had some spontaneous memories arise or feelings arise or have had visions of things that, you know, I didn't know quite what they meant, but our bodies store a lot. And I don't think we really realize that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really interesting how those memories can arise. And a lot of oftentimes clients will say to me, I don't know why this is coming up right now. And it's just because you're ready. Yeah. Your system finally feels safe to do the work. And so it's bringing this back up for you. And sometimes it might be the result of a trigger that you didn't even know was a trigger. Something someone said or a smell even can trigger something that brings you back into that space. It's just really amazing how our body and our mind works together.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. I am. You know, I've had some work also done on my abdominal area. And every once in a while, I will just want, apropos of nothing, to hurl, just throw up. And I always tell the, you know, my practitioner, whoever's working on me, okay, we got to stop because this is something's here and it's letting me know it's here, but it doesn't want, it's like, nope, not yet. It's not time. And so, you know, nobody wants to get thrown up on. So of course the practitioner's like, okay, we'll go somewhere else right now. So, but yeah, our bodies can, yeah, you have to be sometimes pretty gentle in approaching those traumas so that they welcome you in rather than building a wall and saying, no, you shall not pass. I like bringing in a, you know, Lord of the Rings analogy every once in a while. but yeah, that's powerful work. I also saw that you have training in art therapy as well. Were you an artist as a kid or how did that happen?
I have always been fascinated and inspired by art, creativity of really any kind. And I did create a lot of art as a child. And into my teen years, in the absence of having someone to really guide me through the traumas that I had experienced, creating art was my outlet. It was my saving grace. And for a long time, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I wanted to be an art therapist, that I wanted to work specifically with children. And that was where I aimed my education and my path. And into my master's program, I realized that not only did the kind of dogmatic diagnostic system of Western psychology really not sit right with me, but I also needed to do my own work before I could really hold that space for other people. So I put that aside and pursued other things while I continued my education. And it wasn't until 20 years later that I came back to it and started doing this trauma process facilitation. And I'm able to integrate my education and experience in art therapy into that process as well. I also use some movement therapy and many different modalities in that process. But it's really like, you know, no one ingredient is the magic. It's the soup that makes it come to life. You got to blend it all together. All the different modalities really work together in a way that helps the subconscious tell us what the work is.
Yeah. Oh, that subconscious. Being, you know, hiding so many secrets, protecting us.
Yep.
Even if we don't know, it's protecting us. It's so mysterious and delicious down there. Dark. There is some darkness down there, but it is amazing. It's amazing. It's a great place in which to mine, you know, creativity and imagination. And but it can be scary. It can be scary down there too, depending on what's down there.
Absolutely.
So you're saying you work with kids sometimes. Is that what I'm hearing? Okay. I just want to say you are amazing. Okay. Because I can just, you know, working with adults is one thing, but working with children is an entirely different kettle of fish, because sometimes kids can't articulate, which is why the art therapy is so interesting. When I moved to Santa Fe, I was trying to find a therapist, and one of the women I saw, who was very nice, but we ultimately did not work together, was an art therapist. And it was actually, I'm very playful and childlike. I mean, I am. I'm just very playful and childlike. And so she, you know, I went in one day and she said, okay, today we're going to, here's paper and crayons, and I want you to draw me a house. And I want you to, you know, put, and I was like, I love this. This is fun. She's like, I want you to put you in the picture. And then I want you to put like the most important people in the picture. Where are they? Are they inside the house, outside the house? Are they far away? Are they near? So I did all this drawing. I'm like not a good artist. Okay. And finally she goes, you know, we're done. And she's like, okay, let's dissect this. And my God, what I learned about myself, my friends, my family, based on that one drawing was just astounding. I was an adult.
Yeah.
So I can't even imagine what kind of doors and like healing you open up for kids. So, and I mean, just to be present for them, I just commend you. And I'm bowing down to you right now for being able to be present in that way. I'm curious, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you were like, when I grow up?
Well, my mom likes to tell me that I wanted to be a babysitter, a veterinarian, and an astronaut.
I love
that. Which I think still fits in with my personality. I want to take care of people. I want to take care of animals. And I'm just curious about the way the earth and the universe work.
I love that. You know, you were the first person I've interviewed who has said babysitter, okay, as like a vocation. That's just amazing, because I always hated babysitting. I did it, but I hated it because it scared me because, you know, to be responsible for other people's kids was just kind of terrifying for me. And I didn't really, it just felt like a lot of stress, a lot of stress. But I love that you're like, did you ever see the movie Adventures in Babysitting?
I didn't.
Okay. It's from the 80s. Okay. It's good that you haven't seen it until now, because if you saw it when you were young and you're like, my God, this is what could happen when I'm babysitting, you would probably quit everything. Good. But do you think that you've always naturally been drawn towards working with kids?
There was a long period of my life where I would not have been able to work with kids because of the traumas that I experienced and the resultant protector parts, kind of speaking in terms of internal family systems there, the protector parts that stepped in to keep me safe from the traumas I experienced as a child really focused on like the parentification that I experienced. And it became very difficult for me to connect with children because I had separated from that experience.
Oh.
it wasn't until I was able to do a lot of my own work that I started to reconnect with my child parts. And now to be able to drop back into that space and work with children is so profound.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I actually thoroughly enjoy internal family systems, which is a weird thing to say, but I love it because the work that I've done in it has utilized my imagination. And with respect to connection to my body, different parts of my body, my imagination, you know, what's in there? Is it a forest? Is it a little gremlin? Is it a chest with treasure in it? What does it look like that's inside? Then you have to start literally unpacking that chest or wander in that forest, if you will, and see who you meet. And for me, you know, it's hard work.
It is.
But at first it's like delightful. You're like, oh my gosh, look at this gold treasure chest. What could be inside? Then you open it and you're like, oh dear. Oh dear. That was not what I expected. But it is amazing what the body and the mind and the soul will create to protect us. I mean, don't you?
Truly. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the really interesting things about internal family systems and that ability to go into an experience or a trauma that's presenting as a treasure chest or a forest. And it's so much easier for children to connect with that than it is for adults, typically, in my experience, because they're so close to that imaginative play way of being. And as adults, we often get a little bit separated from that. And so it can feel, you know, I know when I was first experiencing that way of working, that form of personal growth work, my guide would ask me, does it have a color, a shape, a name? And I would feel like, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean? Does it have a color, a shape, and a name? I don't know. But then the more I would think about it, I would see something and then I would feel a little trepidatious. Am I making this up or is that really what it is? And ultimately, that's all this like social construct that we create, that we live in as adults. Ultimately, it doesn't matter if you're making it up. That's what's coming up for you. And so that is the tool. That's the path through which you get to do the work. It's going to lead you to where you need to go, whether it's a figment of today's imagination or the way that it really manifests in your subconscious.
Yeah, I have to say that partially why I love it is I never know who I'm going to meet. Mm-hmm. I never know who or what I'm going to encounter. And there's a deep sense of, for me, at least when I engage in a, you know, maybe walking through the woods, let's say, maybe there's, you know, my lower abdomen, I see a path through the woods and I start walking that path through the woods, knowing that something is in there waiting for me. There's just this deep sense of my soul or my being coming up against the infinite. And inside that infinite is not, I wouldn't say all answers. I mean, yes, they're there, but big energies like archetypes and big, big, big mysteries. Yeah. Like they're very palpable. And that's kind of why I like it. I mean, I probably should be more scared about the whole situation, but, there's just such a profound sense of possibility, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. And I don't know that there is a correct way of experiencing that, you know, to say that maybe you should be scared. I understand that, you know, deep in there might be difficult topics to look at, experiences and concepts that can be painful to work with. But, you know, I see in you in this conversation and in the episodes of yours that I've listened to in the past, what a curious person you are and how fascinated you are with the way humans work and what our internal experiences are. So that makes a lot of sense to me in the little that I do know about you, that you would be presented with this thing that it might be hard, but it's also going to be interesting.
Thank God.
And for anyone who's willing to do the work to work through that trauma and come out on the other side, that curiosity is really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really captivated by the fact that I just want to let you know that more often than not, when I ask people, what did you want to be as a kid? Astronaut is like number one.
Yeah.
Numero uno. And so
it's like the biggest unknown, right?
Okay, that was going to be my question. Yeah. Why do you think kids are just so enchanted with the idea of being an astronaut?
I think it represents the like unfathomable, that it's just such a vast expanse that we have only scratched the surface of.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'd fantasized about was working in a library, because this is like at the same time that my parents were buying me all this Barbie stuff. And I played with it for like 5 minutes and I was like, this is so boring. I can't even stand it. I fantasized about working in a library. And what I liked about that scenario was I would always be wearing glasses and I would be being left alone because I would just be with the books or a research lab. Those were the two things. Also in the research lab was I got to wear glasses. I don't know why I was like fixated on glasses when I was a kid, but all inside that as well was I'll be left alone so I can just be smart and like discover things and figure things out. Now life has not worked out that way. I'm sure you could still go back and get a library sciences degree, but I do have the glasses as
That's
you
right.
can
I was
see.
Just about to say.
So I'm like 50% of the way there. But astronaut, you know, I think I just have this innate fear of heights. So I just would not be anywhere near a rocket in any way, shape, or form. So bless all of the kids' hearts in the entire world that are like, I want to be an astronaut.
Yeah. I would never pursue that now, but I am still fascinated by science and space. And I'm almost even more curious about the depths of the ocean at this point.
Oh, yeah. Yes. 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 It's very interesting. I don't know if you have been keeping abreast of the news as far as the discovery of the Higgs field and the Higgs boson. Mm-hmm. Yes. And how it basically proved that there are more dimensions that we can't see or experience. And they don't know if they're like just massive or like really tiny and wrapped in on each other. Mm. But, you know, if they're really tiny and wrapped in to each other, I think to myself, well, then they're within and without us, like our bodies. And so who knows if, you know, when we have a somatic experience or when we go on a walk through the woods in our bodies, if we're actually through our brains or, you know, I don't know, what is it? Alpha state, delta state? I don't know. In that state, we're able to transcend and go into one of those dimensions where these things are held. I think about this sometimes. I think about too much. I have a giant hamster on a wheel in my head and it is exhausted because
I can empathize. I think it's so natural for us to feel like we know what we see in the world, but then a new discovery is made and it just flips everything on its head and we realize, wow, we know so little of what there is to know out in the world, which I find exciting.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to ask you, did you grow up in a religious household? And, you know, if you did, how has that evolved over time to kind of your current understanding? If you have a connection with source or divine energy, what does that look like these days?
Mm. Yeah, I did not grow up in a religious household. My father, who raised us on his own, and he grew up in a Jewish faith, but was not practicing by the time he became a parent. Although, interestingly, I remember a few times in early childhood where he took my brother and me to churches, to church services. He never took us to a synagogue. He never took us to the same church twice, but just, you know, a handful of times. And I'm not sure if that was him seeking out the community that's so essential when raising children, or if he was hoping there was some sense of direction that we might get from those experiences. but it did spark a curiosity in me. And from probably the age of 9 or 10, I started studying different religions and spiritualities and was just so curious. I went to a couple different churches with different friends just to see what it was all about. I started reading a lot of things, everything from Christianity to paganism to Hinduism, Buddhism. And it really, you know, it fed that curiosity in me about what makes us different, what makes us the same, the age-old questions about where did we come from and where do we go? You know, is it all just biology and luck, or is there something bigger out there? And through my own meditations and studies over and over again, the themes that resonate with me are the idea of source energy that, in my experience, is just love. That we're all made of it, we come from it, we return to it. And it just gets reinforced over and over in the different theologies and spiritual practices that I study. It's really profound, and in very deep meditation, especially like holotropic breathing meditations, really palpable experiences come to me about this love energy and how we interact with it, and the concept of oneness that we all participate in. And then I might pick up a new book. I just picked up a book on the tantric religions, and it describes exactly what I saw in my meditations. It's fascinating. I mean, these are like universal experiences connecting to source energy. And for me, organized religion just doesn't fit. I don't feel like any one person can tell you how to believe, how to worship, how to connect with source energy. I think that it does a lot of good for a lot of people, but it's not right for me. But I do love seeing those concepts represented over and over again in different belief systems. And it fits really well into the trauma work that I do, because another message that I've gotten in these meditations is that all suffering is collective suffering. So when we heal our own trauma, we are lightening the collective burden. And it speaks down into generational trauma, trauma cycles, all of that. It's just really, really powerful.
Holy crap. Oh my God. Because I just had this groundbreaking for me interview, and my last podcast release was with Birmingham's inaugural poet laureate, Salaam Green. And she talks about doing a residency at a plantation. She's African American. And part of the residency was her interviewing descendants of slaves and then investigating her own family and history of slavery, and then talking about the descendants of the overseers and those who owned slaves. Mm. And is very interesting. First of all, it's like one of the most beautiful and powerful episodes I've ever produced in my entire life. I mean, I just sat there and listened to her and I was like, oh my God. But in the process of all of that excavation, she became profoundly ill, and her body, she says, you know, it was a lot to take on mentally, emotionally, you know, physically, living on the land. And we had this really interesting and I thought powerful discussion, because we talked about the land. You know, now the plantation is, you know, all pretty and cleaned up. And the land is, of course, gorgeous, as it always was. And I said, you know, the land was a witness too to all that suffering and that horror and that pain and anguish. And I'm a really big believer in the land trying to soak up and recycle as much as it can, as far as suffering and emotions and feelings and energies. But, you know, when we want to heal generational suffering, our own suffering, the suffering of those who came before us, we also need to factor in places like that, right? A plantation that has so much history of abuse. We also need to factor in, how do we heal the suffering of the land as well? Because the land needs to be included. It has also been witness to all of this stuff. And, you know, whether that looks like singing to the land or hugging a tree or planting some flowers or just saying hello every morning and greeting it. I think, you know, I absolutely believe in collective suffering, and I think it includes all these other beings as well that have chosen, you know, unwittingly or not, to live during the time of Homo sapiens and all of our trials and tribulations. You know, I just, what you just said is so powerful. I'm just kind of gobsmacked. I want to ask you, what kind of meditation do you do?
I use a variety of different meditations in my own practice. It really depends on what my goal is in that moment. But before I get into that, I just want to acknowledge what you were just saying, that I got goosebumps when you were talking about that. I'm excited to go back and finish that episode. I started it, but I haven't finished it yet. I just can't even imagine going to the place of my generational trauma and experiencing that. And that, I really think that even that processing, bringing that curiosity and compassion to that land and having those conversations there, is part of that healing process for everyone involved, including the land. That is just really an incredible commitment to that work.
Yeah.
To go there and go through that. That's really amazing.
Yeah. When she said she got sick, I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Surprised. God. No kidding. My goodness. Oh, well, to answer your question about meditation, I do a white light meditation. I'm not sure if this is something you're familiar with, but the meditation that I do most frequently, not only for myself, but also with my clients, is part of the IFS and EMDR processes. And it's imagining a white light outside your body, breathing it in so that it spreads throughout your body with each in-breath a little further, exhaling anything that isn't serving you in that moment. And as that energy draws all the way down to your fingers and your toes at whatever pace your body and your mind are ready for, you're breathing in self-energy. Self-energy is love energy. It is the connective energy that we all participate in this like oneness experience of being a human on this planet. And when we're in our self-energy, we're operating from a place of compassion and curiosity and confidence. And it strips away all of the other factors that might have to do with trauma response or judgment or self-consciousness, fear, anger, and just allows us to be in that moment in our truest expression of ourself with compassion and curiosity for ourselves and for others. So it can be a recharge in that moment to reconnect. It can be a way of processing. You know, some places will be protected and you can't get the energy in there. And that's a part in IFS terms that you can then work with.
I love it. I love it. You know, of course, YouTube is now a treasure trove of different meditations that you can do.
Yep.
And I really enjoy the ones where, you know, they have you imagine things. Whether it's a white light or, you know, imagine the color of your chakras as we go down the, you know, and that's really, and color is such a powerful, I had no idea color was so healing and profound and powerful until I started doing meditations from YouTube on, you know, going from chakra to chakra and the color infusing your entire body. And it's just, yeah. So again, it's one of those things where it's not one size does not fit all. Find what works for you. But quite honestly, the studies and the science, the research into what meditation can do for our bodies and our souls. But I mean, we can more readily measure our bodies, right? And sure, how things shift there is kind of crazy.
And that has been measured. the way we react on a physiological level when we're in meditative states is really incredible. And I think that ties in to circle back with what you were talking about different planes of existence.
Yeah. Yeah. So exciting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I feel like we're at the front or at the vanguard of a very great mystery, you know, because at one point, and this is just from a Western colonial empire perspective, the entire world was a mystery. And so they would just put people on ships and say, hope you make it back. Hope to see you again.
Yeah.
Don't know how long this is going to take or when you're coming back, but God be with you. And, you know, some people would come back and some people would not for various reasons. But mm-hmm. Just that sense of just the unknown and there being this vast, vast mystery. And I feel like we're at the vanguard of that as far as consciousness. And, you know, maybe if you want to go, because I think the soul is so evanescent and ephemeral, will we ever be able to understand? Or it's like Quicksilver. Can you catch it? Mm-hmm. We're at the vanguard of something that is so astonishing that it's scary and exciting at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's really interesting to me that our brains, as powerful as they are, still cannot fully conceive of what our own souls are. And to add to that, I also believe that magic is really just science we don't understand yet.
I agree. Yes. I mean, I really do think that maybe in 100 or 200 years, which, you know, I'm grateful to be born in this time, but I'm also kind of annoyed because I feel like in 200 years, you know, if we haven't blown each other to smithereens, we're going to have a greater understanding of, you know, I don't know if you've been listening to the telepathy tapes, but it's like telepathy. I mean, I know ever since I was a kid that I have sometimes known what other people think or will know when someone's going to call me or will think of someone and they'll reach out to me. I mean, it's this very basic. And I just always thought, well, I'm connected at this level. Like we're all at the same level. And sometimes if we find resonance with someone else, a deep resonance, you know, things we can connect in ways that are not understandable, but it's very exciting to hear shows like the telepathy tapes or any sort of scientist like Rupert Sheldrake and his experiments that parrot. I was like, how do people not understand the research that's been done already that irrevocably demonstrates that communication doesn't have to be just verbal,
right?
You know, or written, that there is a whole other place and space that we can access where we can communicate, which is very, very exciting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the powerful things of meditation is it quiets the chatter so that we can connect on those deeper levels, whether it's telepathically or with our own subconscious or with those universal truths that, you know, when you aren't sure what the right answer is for yourself and you can really deeply connect with your core self, you know the answer. It's in there.
Yeah. 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 I'm sure that in the work that you do, you've been privy to some really astonishing, you've been witness to some really astonishing healings. And I think that's part of the potency of the work that you do is that, yes, you have all this training, you have all this schooling, you've been so diligent about getting the accreditation and the training and what have you, but, you know, to distill it down, you're a facilitator and a witness so that you can help the individual that has come to you, whether it's a kid or an adult or whatever, to just be present and hold space for them and to help them integrate and understand and maybe even take a few steps beyond what they've experienced to help them think about something in a new way. I don't know. Do you ever become drunk with power? Because I will.
Well, I really appreciate that you used the word witness. And I don't feel drunk with power. I feel drunk with gratitude. Just immense gratitude and honor to witness, because I'm not in charge of other people's healing. I'm just showing them the tools and holding space for them while they do their own work. And that's exactly the right word, is witnessing. And I say that often to my clients, that it's just such an honor to witness this transformation. And I'm so honored to be able to be present for that. It's so powerful and vulnerable and inspiring. It's just really, there is no limit to how powerful we are in our capacity for healing.
Yeah.
It's truly inspiring and incredible. And I mean, I see it every day in my practice with my clients, that when they show up to do the work, and I have some clients who've experienced some very, very deep trauma, and they still have the courage. They find the courage to show up and do the work. And to see that transformation occur is really incredible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I think to show up for the work just indicates that they have hope that things can
exactly
be different or change or shift or what have you.
Yeah.
I'd love to ask the main question of the podcast, which is, I would so appreciate if you could share more than one story. It doesn't have to just be one story. Some people have like three small stories. Some people have one giant story. Mm-hmm. Of something that you've either witnessed or experienced that you thought was magical, mysterious, or miraculous. I have had everything under the sun. When I started this podcast, I don't think I understood what meaning makers humans are, and we are makers. And it has been just fascinating hearing people's stories, and but also, hearing all of the, I don't know, you could say transcendent, strange, odd, bizarre, out of the box things that actually happen in this world that no one talks about.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you'd like to share.
Yeah, well, I have no doubt that you've heard an amazing variety of really interesting stories. I feel like there's just magic all around for people who have the eyes to see. And I feel like I've been really fortunate to live a life full of it. And I feel like I experience it every day, like we were just talking about, in those transformations that I witness in people and the transformation that I observed in myself when I was doing my own growth work in those first stages. But I feel really compelled to share this one story with you. That's a little bit more, I think, in line with maybe a more traditional idea of magic or the mystical. And it happened when I had just moved to Sarasota, Florida, and I was participating in a women's circle, looking for community, looking to deepen kind of my own introspective search for the meaning of life, and wanting a group of women to explore that with. And the person who led the circle and I wanted to get to know each other a little bit better. So we decided to go on a hike in one of the nature preserves there it was a place that she really enjoyed. And pretty early in our walk, we came across this very reedy shore on the swamp. And before I moved to Sarasota, I thought of swamps as being kind of musty and dark and scary. No, it's like beautiful, clear water and reeds and trees and just absolutely gorgeous. So we stop at this little clearing on the shore with reeds all around and dragonflies just darting in and out all over. And I just kind of make an offhand comment about dragonflies carrying fairies and what a magical space this is. And, we're giving gratitude to the dragonflies for blessing our hike today. And we continue on our way. And I'm pretty into wayfinding and off-trail hiking. So periodically I'm turning around and just orienting myself with how things will look when we're returning. And we're on our walk for, I don't know, maybe an hour or two. And we come upon this gorgeous tree. So we stop, we sit under the tree. Our conversation gets very deep about spirituality, past lives, mysticism, really just drop right in. It seems like maybe we've sat there for 30, 45 minutes. We're like, okay, that was really good. Let's head on back. Maybe we'll get some lunch. We stand up. We're both kind of like in this like ethereal headspace from our conversation. And we both realize that literally nothing looks familiar except for the tree that we've been sitting under. Like, well, we're just kind of disoriented because we just dropped way in. So let's just start walking. We obviously approached from this direction, so we'll just head back that direction. And I'll bet as soon as we get around that corner, everything will fall into place and we'll see the path and we'll know where we're going. And we walked for about an hour. And then we come, I'm like, I think around this corner, we're going to be at the parking lot. We round the corner. We are at the same tree. We haven't recognized anything at all along our walk. And now we've made a full circle. Okay, that's pretty trippy. Well, I don't know what to say. Let's just keep going, I guess. So we go back. We're like heading back down the path, the one direction we know that we're supposed to go. Same thing. We wind up back at this same tree. And now at this point, like, we've been out here for a few hours and it's kind of starting to get close to dusk. So she's starting to panic a little bit. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. This is like, I think of her as the leader of our women's circle. I'm like looking to her for guidance. And now she's starting to get a little anxious about the situation in a place that she's supposedly familiar with. And she's like, okay, we need to walk through the swamp to that roadway over there. I was like, okay, you grew up here. I'm pretty new, but I don't know how deep that water is. Don't we need to worry about alligators and snakes and stuff? She goes, oh, good point. I was like, okay. Okay. Well, here's everything's going to be fine. I realize at that point that I kind of need to take charge of the situation. You know what? I don't think we should walk through the water. But you know what? If we have to, this huge tree looks really stable. We could sleep in the tree if we have to, but we still have plenty of time. I don't think it's going to be a problem. We've got snacks. We're going to be fine. Let's just try to make one more go for the parking lot. So we start on our little trail. We get to a spot where it looks like it's just grass to the road. We can't quite tell how far the road is. It's a few hundred yards, but not too far, but it looks like there's no water. So I'm like, okay, let's just walk to the road. As soon as we step off the trail and start walking through this like knee to waist high grass, we get completely accosted by mosquitoes. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with mosquitoes of Florida, but one of the good things about them is that they're so big, you can feel them land on you. So you can usually swat them away before they take a nibble. Except that there were so many, so many. Nobody ever goes into this part of the park. So they were very hungry. And so this very spiritual woman and I are trudging through this waist-high grass in a swamp, slapping ourselves silly, walking towards this road. We finally get to the road and we realize it's on top of a 10-foot retaining wall. We can see that a ways down, there's a way to get up to the road. It's a little far, but it's also like now it is dusk. So we have to just keep going at this point. So we've made the decision. We're just going to keep going. I'm trying to like stay positive. This is insane, but it's going to be fine. A ranger pulls up in his truck And he gets out with one eyebrow raised real high. He goes, "What are you ladies doing?" Like, "Oh my goodness, sir. We are so lost. We just want to get back to our car." And he's like shaking his head. "All right, walk on up that away. Come on up to the road. I'll meet you down there." We get in his truck. He says, "Now, which parking lot are you in?" She tells him where we parked, and he goes, "Ladies, that is clear on the other side of the park." "Okay, I'm going to drive you over there." It took him almost an hour to drive us to our parking spot. Keep in mind that our initial hike to the tree was like 30 to 45 minutes or maybe an hour. We finally get back to the truck or back to her car, and now it's dark. We're hungry, we're dirty, we're disheveled, we're confused, completely bewildered. We're like, "Okay, we're going to the nearest Mexican restaurant and we are going to get burritos and margaritas and talk about what the heck just happened." So we do it. As soon as we've got a little food in our bellies, we're laughing. It's like, what a bizarre experience. We go home. The next morning, I call her up and I'm like, "Do you have any mosquito bites?" Neither of us had a single bite. And all of a sudden, I flash back to that moment with the dragonflies. I'm like, "Oh, wow. You know what? Those little tricksters decided to show us a little lesson." And it was a really important moment for me to realize that I couldn't look for someone else to guide me, that I had the answers within myself. We all have our pieces to contribute and we can learn from each other, but ultimately we are our best guides. So it was.
Oh my God. You know what I was thinking while you were telling a story? I was like, first you make this kind of portentous observation about the dragonflies and the fairies. Uh-huh. And then you know, you keep walking and then you find this tree that's so big and beautiful. And I thought to myself, "Oh God, that's like a fairy tree."
Exactly.
You lose time. You go, you sit under its branches. You think, "Oh, half an hour has passed." 5 hours later, it's like you lose time. But not only that, you know, you lost time. Maybe did you lose time? I can't remember.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you come out, it's like you're in another universe or land.
Exactly.
Which is exactly what happens with fairies. You don't even notice that you've gone through this portal to another, and everything looks the same because it's a mirror image, but it's like, "Oh my God. Okay. I am not a wayfinder. Okay. So I commend you on looking behind you to figure out where you're going. But what's crazy to me is that you sit under this tree and then you can't find the path."
Yeah.
That is bizarre.
It was truly. And I later looked up trying to identify what the tree was. And I'm pretty confident it's a buttonwood, which is kind of a cousin of mangrove. And I believe that, you know, when certain plants or animals or things kind of come into your life and they feel of significant note, that, you know, regardless of, you don't have to take it literally, but it can be, it can provide information that can help guide you through whatever cycle or phase in your life you're in. And some of the characteristics attributed to buttonwood specifically are resilience, because it thrives in challenging coastal conditions, known for like standing strong in the face of adversity. And that felt really powerful for me in that moment. They're also really connected to adaptability because being mangrove associate, they live in like freshwater and brackish water, and that they're super connected to the ecosystem. So they like foster a sense of community and interconnection. So it was, just felt really validating, I guess, when I started to do a little more research into what that, how that shows up for people in general.
Oh gosh. Yeah. And part of my takeaway is that fairies are jerks.
Well, they're tricksters.
They are tricksters. Oh my gosh. I can't even believe it that you are observing this gorgeousness. And you made this comment about fairies and they're like, oh, we've got a live one here. We're going to have to teach a lesson now. It's like, what else is on the calendar today? Nothing? Great.
Yeah. We've got all day.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for that story, because it is, I mean, I've not heard a story like that. It's fabulous. I have been in Florida, but not witnessed those mosquitoes. And dear God, I would have maybe been driven insane if they were like landing, you know, I would have started weeping maybe, because that whole situation, I mean, my God. And then the ranger pulling up just all cash. And he's like, hey, what are you doing at the bottom of this wall?
Yeah. Yep. He knew.
Yes, I have a feeling. Like, I know.
Yep.
I know what's going on here. And he's like, I'll wait for you up there. And then he gave you a ride. Bless his heart.
He did. Not,
wow. Yeah. Those fairies. Stinkers.
I hope you all enjoyed Genesee's story and hearing about, you know, when you least expect it. And if you don't take them seriously, those little pixies and fairies, well, they'll teach you a lesson. So next time you're walking on the land and you see something maybe magical or something that's out of the norm, just nod your head and say, hey, I see you. And yeah, we're going to keep on walking. To learn more about Genesee and the incredible work that she's doing in the world, there will be a link to her website, as well as a separate link to her guided white light meditation. So make sure to check both of those things out. You know, it's not often that someone as brilliant and learned as she is offers us something free and beautiful to help ourselves. So take advantage and then do a deeper dive on Genesee and the magic that she is creating in the world. I need to thank Genesee for being on the show and for telling her story, and also for her ability to wayfind. As I said, I am okay at wayfinding, but yeah, she kept her cool and she made sure that eventually they were heading in the right direction. I want to thank each and every one of you who listens. Please, I do ask this every time, if you would consider leaving a rating or writing a little review, I'd be ever so grateful. They help other people find this little podcast of mine, and I'm trying to spread the love and share the love about what a magical and beautiful place this world really is. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Genesee. I mean, I would say actually, what I think is most precious about her story is that she, with a sense of humor, really learned her lesson. She and her friend were confronted by the old gods, who decided to play a little trick on them. And rather than losing her cool or getting frustrated or angry, she kept going. And not only that, she and her friend kept going. You know, they didn't know where they were heading. Maybe it was into a swamp, and maybe there were going to be things that bit them, let alone mosquitoes. But still, she didn't give up. And at the end of her journey, and at the end of the lesson, she just took note that when you're in the lands of the old gods, which is, let's be honest, pretty much everywhere on this planet, you need to approach and engage with a sense of play, with a sense of respect, and with a sense that maybe they might teach you a little lesson. And then accept that lesson graciously, my friends. As we approach Halloween and the Day of the Dead, go forth with respect and be wary of those things we can't see, because they've been here far longer than we have.
And yeah, if you don't watch your step, they just might want to stay in touch.